Welcome back to Marvel Good Yay, the spinoff of the Geek Easy podcast, where we are going back to rewatch all of the MCU films leading up to the release of Avengers Endgame. I am Pixel Dan.
Jonathan Leonard.
Jaren Forever.
Oh, I like it. We are talking about Black Panther today, Wakanda Forever. I'm excited.
I can't think of the title of this movie not in Forrest Whitaker's accent.
The Black Panther. Yes.
This movie's pretty good.
You got the numbers for us?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's dive right in.
Yeah.
So this one is
a big one.
Landfall, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I got them. They're right here. They're ready to go. But you guys.
Oh, okay.
So Black Panther is amazing Marvel movie, right?
I concur. You're accurate.
It was huge, right? Changed records. All black cast. All black production staff. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, Martin Freeman's in it.
And Martin Freeman. And Martin Freeman and Andy Serkis.
Yeah.
All right. It doesn't list a production budget, so I don't know what that means. But I'm going to guess the 180 range.
Yeah.
So most of these seem to be popping.
Doesn't seem like it was any. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing in it looked more expensive than Ragnarok.
Right.
You know?
We got $700 million domestic.
Man.
Jeez.
$646 foreign. For a grand total of $1.34 billion.
Oh my God!
So, we're in Avengers territory.
Yeah. Right, right. Wasn't this the biggest money-making Marvel movie when it was released, or up there, or something like that?
No. Overall, no. I know. I mean, the first Avengers was around like 1.5.
Okay.
I think this is around. This might be bigger than Iron Man 3. I mean, it's up towards the top
right,
for sure.
Right.
The funny thing about this one too, though, is it made more in America than it did in the rest of the world combined, which you don't see that often.
That's,
you know, by over 50 million.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
that's,
I mean, they're close together, but this is definitely a USA all the way. You know.
Yeah.
And therefore, it may very well be the biggest USA.
Yeah.
Maybe the biggest.
I thought it was like the biggest. I thought they were promoting it as the biggest money-making Marvel movie.
And if they're just counting U.S., maybe domestically, it might be.
It's funny how that, because for a long, I mean, worldwide totals have always been a thing, but for the longest time, the only one that actually mattered when they were making those comparisons was the USA one.
Right.
And then eventually, like, the world as a whole became the big, which makes sense, total sense, especially as everything's being globalized.
Mm.
But if they were going back to the USA being what matters for the fact that it broke all those records, that's very possible.
So. Yeah, that could be. Well, it was a very culturally significant movie for sure. And I think that was one of the coolest things about this movie, honestly, was just that cultural significance.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really amazing. You know, you talked about how the cast was a mostly all black cast.
Yep.
And this was a movie that, like, put front and center, like, a very powerful black superhero.
Right.
Kind of gave, you know, the black kids generation, like, a superhero to look up to.
Yeah.
That got, you know, it wasn't a movie where you had to have, like, a black superhero with a white superhero at the same time or anything like that. Like, this was straight on, like, it.
But it also wasn't like he didn't have to be in the ghetto. It wasn't.
Yes,
it wasn't,
exactly. Yes.
Pootie Tang or Meteor Man.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
You're totally right. Absolutely.
It definitely was not.
I just thought that part of it was really cool. And, you know, even like on my side of things, just kind of seeing the toy stuff and the significance of like the. Like all the merchandise that they got to put out for this movie, and like, you know, you would see the commercials promoting like all of the role play items for Black Panther with all the, you know, the black children and the commercials, and knowing that stuff was very successful because like all these kids had this new role model to look up to, and I think that's so cool and so important and culturally significant, which is exactly what this whole movie did. I think it's awesome,
and it's the first. I mean, they've now done that 2 years in a row. They've used their pre-Avengers March release, or I think this one is actually February.
Yeah.
To break, because Captain Marvel becomes a, I don't think it's as big, but it's broken the $1 billion mark.
Yeah.
Right, right.
So that's two in a row that, you know, 10 years ago, these movies might not have been made.
Right.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Now they are
absolutely
mega hits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I also, You know, I feel like I should say I did not expect to appreciate, I guess, like it being a mostly black cast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm half black.
Right.
For the audio listeners.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what they, you know, that I just assume our listeners are woke and they don't see in color, so. But I didn't expect to be, you know, I was excited about it. I thought it sounded cool, but I didn't expect to be like really like, oh man, yeah. You know, and it really like when I watched it, I was like, man, this is important. You know, I feel this, yeah. You know, this feels like something happening.
Yeah.
You know,
I am no black and I got that feeling. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yep.
Like it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and even like as we're going to get into it, but like the story aspect of it and like Killmonger's whole purpose and reason for doing what he's doing, like you feel it, right? Like all of it, even though like I don't know, like I think watching this movie gave me a little bit of that white guilt, you know what I mean? For real. Yeah. Like you get to some of those scenes and you're like, well, I'm the worst. Well, you know, you know?
When I first, this one's only a year old and I've seen it 6 times.
Yeah, totally. Me too.
The first MCU Oscar winner it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, none of the big prizes, but it got a bunch of nominations, including Best Picture, which is a big deal right there.
Because
no MCU movie has been given contention at all
mm-hmm.
until now. And it did get some wins for like, you know, costume design, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember how many it won, but it did win some. When I first saw this and going through Killmonger's whole setup, I remember thinking, this is another Marvel villain that I'm practically rooting for.
Yeah.
You know, now the more I watched it, the more I've decided I don't know that I am rooting for him. And they even have a line in the movie where they say, because I start to say, you know, like, well, he's totally justified.
Yeah.
For sure. But then he's just basically trying to become the same thing.
Yes.
And then I caught that they even said that in the movie. They say, you know, you're just trying to become the thing you hate anyway. And
right.
I'm like, all right, so maybe I'm not rooting for him because then it's just a different evil.
Well, it's that thing.
But you totally get exactly
you understand why he feels the way he does. Yeah. You understand the motivation, but he's taking it to the extreme.
Yeah.
Right? Like he you understand and you know why he feels the way he feels.
Yeah.
He's just not going about his revenge the right way.
Yeah.
Revenge is bad, right?
Yeah. Like history is written by the winners.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so if he does win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is what it is at that point, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Except that he's not.
Go ahead.
Okay.
All right.
So this is
I'm in.
All right. You ready?
Tell me.
So this is, and I'm going to have to diverge a little bit here. This is why I love Killmonger
mm-hmm.
as a bad guy, because he gets something that some of the other bad guys who you feel like you want to root for that they don't. Okay, because he is a true villain.
Yeah.
Right. So we've got Tombs in Spider-Man.
Yep.
Who you kind of root for in Homecoming, you kind of root for him. And everything he says is legitimate.
Right.
And, you know, he feels and believes what he says. We'll get to Infinity War and Thanos. Thanos believes what he said, right? There, at no point does he go back on that.
And what about Baron
Zemo?
Yep. Yeah, Zemo mm-hmm. is another one that's like you totally makes sense what he's
right.
doing.
Yep. Yep. And I will submit that Killmonger does not.
Okay.
Killmonger is using everything he says is a front to get people behind him and to kind of give a cause. Okay. He's saying all this stuff and you know, it gets overshadowed because so much of the stuff, like you guys say, you know, it kind of triggers that and we feel that, and that's what he does. He uses that to get people kind of on his side, you know, and even, you know, especially when he gets to Wakanda. The reason I will say that I don't believe he believes any of that is they let him at the end when he's fighting Black Panther and they're having that fight. Black Panther says, you know, you're just as bad as everybody else. But what really happens there is at one point after that, he says, you know, you don't. Everything you're doing, it's not going to help. It's just going to, you just want to destroy the world. And he says that. He said, you just want to destroy the world.
Yeah.
And Killmonger goes, this world took everything from me. I'm going to take everything from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's totally a supervillain thing.
Yeah, you know, and he doesn't, so he doesn't care. He's not actually trying to help anybody. He wants to watch it all burn. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's what keeps him. He doesn't actually believe what he's saying. He doesn't want to help all the people who, you know, he says that line, you know, half the people who look like us around the world, they're all oppressed and blah, blah, blah. You know, they've never had that. We're going to give them the tools to fight back. He's not going to give them the tools to fight back. He's going to give them the tools to, you know,
destroy each other.
Yeah, to burn everything down.
Yeah.
You know, so
some men just want to watch the world burn.
Right, exactly. You know what I mean? And so, you know, Thanos never gets that moment, or hasn't yet, right? Tombs isn't like that. You know, Tombs believes what he's doing. He's doing it for his family. He's doing it to make money, and he's doing it because, you know, he's been held down. Like, so all these guys, you know, so he's the only one, and I think that makes a really great villain, and kind of comes back to my thing. It kind of comes back to me as a wrestler, right? So there's in wrestling... and in wrestling, we say, you know, at some point a heel has to show their ass, right? And that's where he does that, you know, because you can have a cool heel, you can have a heel that wrestles, you know, and can match a face in wrestling. If at some point he doesn't have that moment, he doesn't, you know, remind you that he's the bad guy, then he's just a cool heel.
Right.
You know? That's what I love about Killmonger, and I think it gets missed a lot because of that, like the moment where the moment where he shows his ass doesn't really get the gravitas that it deserves, you know, to really pull that all together for him. And I think that just make him all the stronger,
right?
Because you still feel that, you know what I mean? And that almost makes him like puts him on the level of like kind of a cult leader type, you know what I mean? Where he's like, I'm doing all this to get to the, I'm saying all this so that you'll get behind me, but I don't believe it. I want something else.
Man, that's crazy. That's a good thought, though, man. And I know we're jumping all around, but I don't think it matters with this. I don't need to go completely in order. But I just want to kind of, you know, just build on what we've been saying about him all along. His death scene, is pretty intense too. It is so excellent because he has that quote. Well, like, because he talks about how his dad always told him how beautiful Wakanda was, and he was going to bring him there to show him the sunsets.
Yeah.
And so T'Challa has that kind of moment where he's like, he drags him out there and he lets him see the sunset in Wakanda.
Well, that's another great moment. Let's not flash over that, because he also says there, he says, can you believe that? A kid from Compton believing in fairy tales.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that almost, like, he reverts so quick. When he gets stabbed there, you know, he reverts so quick from like Killmonger to a scared little kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's another great, like, that's almost a little bit more, you know, of that moment extended there, because now we see, you know, he's not, you know, he's a scared little kid reacting to his trauma. He's not Killmonger anymore, you know? But so go ahead. So
when he has that quote there at the end where he says, bury me in the ocean so I can join all of my ancestors who jumped off the boats because they knew that that death in the waters was better than being a slave.
Yeah.
Holy crap, dude. Like, that's just like, that is so intense.
Yeah.
And
he pulls the blade out and dies.
Yeah, man. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's something else. Yeah.
Yep. Because they could, I mean, they could have saved him, and Black Panther even tells him that.
Yep.
And he's like, nope, because you'll just keep me locked up.
Yeah, so you can lock me up.
Yeah. Man, good stuff. Yeah.
And that does open it back up a little bit, too, to be like there can be a little bit of dual, you know, like he can mean what he says a little bit. There's a little bit of that in there.
Yeah.
You know, that's not his driving force, because his driving force is his, you know, he wants to watch this world burn.
Yeah.
But, what you know, he... like everything else he was still saying was coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get to see, like, it comes from his dad. You know, he was raised by that.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, he was raised by a you know, revolutionary. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. We even kind of get that moment, too, where, because, like, after he got the Black Panther powers, he had the field burns that so that nobody else could get the Black Panther powers after him.
Yeah.
And then, gosh, I always forget his name.
T'Challa?
No, the military guy, the white guy.
Martin Freeman. Agent Ross.
Yes. Okay, so Ross says that's what he does. That's what he was trained to do. Like, you know, his role when he was a soldier was, like, they would go into these places when, you know, empires were falling. Yes. Yep. And like, they would come in and they would conquer and they would burn it all down. And
loved that.
Yeah,
Because he's like, he even, you know, they come in during, you know, transitions of power.
Yeah.
Right.
So he was basically waiting for
T'Chaka to die. Oy, yeah.
To die. So this could happen
right.
in the first place. That's what put everything into motion.
Yes.
Right, so right.
Really spins that military training
yep.
into yeah. it. So. But that even plays more into what you were saying. Like, that was his plan the whole time, was yeah. to come in there and just burn it all down.
Yeah.
He well, was yeah, get because the power for himself and just
yep, yeah. because he's not interested in building a new dynasty.
Yeah,
he's not interested in having, you know. I mean, you would think he becomes king. Eventually, he'll take a queen and have kids to rule the Wakandan Empire. Nope, he's not interested in that. He's yep. he burned this all down so nobody else can have this power.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Man, that's intense, dude. He's a great villain.
He is a great.
He is a great villain. One of the best in the MCU, no doubt about it.
He's been stabbed and he's dead now. And I guess that's Black Panther.
That's it, guys. We just went through the whole thing. Now, like I said, I don't think we need to go through it all in order, but yeah. we can talk about some of the highlights.
Yeah,
the
we can hit some highlights. Which I want to jump right. So while we're talking about villains, man, Andy Serkis. Needs an Oscar.
Man, dude, he's like
maybe,
amazing.
You
dude.
Know, maybe not for this. He needs an Oscar for something, man. He can do anything, right?
He's just sitting there in that interrogation room, and they go in there, and he's just sitting there singing.
Yeah.
Baby, don't hurt me. For no reason whatsoever. Yeah. It's so fantastic.
I like in the club when Ross comes up to him and like brings up what he's doing. And he's like, that's quite an entourage you got here. You guys about to drop a mixtape? And he just goes, oh, yeah, we can get you the SoundCloud link. And he turns around and he's like, hey, get him the SoundCloud link. Like he's legitimately got a mixtape that he's going
to
like.
Ross goes, please don't make me listen to your music.
Yeah. That's amazing. Fantastic, man.
Well, and I love when he's escaping too. And this is something that I'm starting to see a little more in movies that I really like. Because he has the gun hidden in his hand.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And at one point he fires it and blows up the thing. Like, shoots T'Challa across the room.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
blows up the thing and he's like, I made it rain.
Yeah. The money's going
yeah. everywhere. But then he runs outside and he gets outside and all his men are like trying to get him in this car and he's just like, that was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was amazing. Let's do that again. You know, and it's just like I love that reaction because I feel like we've gotten to a place where that just like, if I had a gun in my arm and I blew something up, realistically, I probably wouldn't be like, that was amazing, that was awesome, but I feel like I would.
Yeah.
You know, I've watched enough movies now that that feels like a more genuine reaction than when they're like all sulky and, you know, or brooding and escape.
Right.
I always think about that just as a little aside. It's the same type of feeling I get in The Force Awakens.
Okay.
When they first jump on the Millennium Falcon and they escape. And right after they escape, they come running back into the same room. They're like, that was amazing. Yeah. Can you believe we did that? You know, and I'm like, yeah, that's how I would react. I wouldn't be like, okay, where to next?
That's
you know
awesome. What I mean? If we were on the Millennium
exactly.
Falcon.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Totally. You know, so I get that same kind of feeling when Andy Serkis comes out of the bar there. And he's like, oh, that was amazing.
What about when he pulls the vibranium out of his pants and it's just in the plastic bag that says fragile written on it. And he's like, well, I was going to buy a fancy suitcase. And
right.
Like, he took the time to put in a paper bag and write fragile on it.
That's something we definitely...
Yeah. But it's just a hunk of metal.
Yeah. The most indestructible metal ever.
Yeah, right. It's fragile.
Yeah. Yeah, while we're on that scene there, when we talk about the success of this movie, like, especially on a financial level, like, I know the majority of that is driven by the ground that is broken by this movie.
Yep.
But also, it has to be an awesome movie.
Right.
For that to happen, you know? And right here, we start at that scene in that underground casino, and we basically have like a 15-minute span of movie here where we go straight through a series that's ripped right out of a James Bond movie and transition right into a scene from a Fast and Furious movie.
Oh, you know? My gosh,
and it is just such a fun 15 minutes to sit through.
Yeah.
You know, just from a movie-watching perspective, like, that is nonstop.
Yep.
And you get, you know, two different genres, pretty much, and, I mean... They're both action-y, but you get those very distinct scenes that flow perfectly into one another, and you get wit, you get hand-to-hand, you get crazy driving action, you get
cool explosions. You get everything.
Yeah.
And you just walk away satisfied. You know?
I love it. I love Sherry, T'Challa's little sister. I think she's great. And I love this scene, too, because she gets to do, like, the remote driving of the car while he's just, like, riding on top of it in full Black Panther armor. I think that's fantastic.
I love when the girls go running out and jump into that car, and they're like, you know, what about the child? And the one's like, he'll catch up.
Yeah.
Like, they're just taking care of business.
Oh, man, they're great.
Yep.
I love when they wreck the car, too, because, like, oh my gosh, I can't remember their names, but I love
Okoye.
Yes, she's like she basically like surfs on the top of like the shred of metal from the car. But then the other one just like is still sitting in the driver's seat, just like skidding down the road, holding the steering wheel. It's amazing.
What's her name? Nikie.
I mean, I think it was Nikie or Nikio or something like that.
I'll find out.
I had all their names memorized, but I. I'm on the spot on a podcast now, so I'm forgetting everything. So, Shuri. I love Shuri though, and I like
the technology.
The technology. I was just gonna say the look into all the technology is a lot of fun. Like I love the scene where right after he first becomes king, and she's kind of like introducing him to. Like, she shows him the different armors and everything. But I love, too, like she makes fun of him for wearing the sandals.
Yeah.
One of those.
Yeah. Like, you got your bare toes out in my science lab or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then she, like...
She puts on those noise-canceling shoes.
Yeah.
Guess what I call them? Sneakers.
Well, I like how they're fully automated, just like that old American movie that Dad used to watch.
Right.
Yeah. And then the suits are fun too. I like too, cause I didn't catch this before, but like she's got the different ones there and one of them is the one with the big gold ones and that's the one he turns down. That's the one Killmonger wears later on. So that's pretty awesome there. Because he says something about it being too elaborate and he wants to be a little more subtle, which is why he picks the smaller silver one instead of the big elaborate gold one. So I think that's a neat characterization thing cause that's what Killmonger picks later is like the big elaborate gold one. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But this is neat too because we kind of get to see some more stuff with the vibranium suit, and this is a fun scene too because it's got the reaction to it where like it absorbs
kinetic energy.
Kinetic energy. And then can blast it back out. And I love it when she's like, "Okay, now kick it again in the same spot." And she starts filming. He's like, "Why are you recording?" And she's like, "For science purposes."
Right.
Then he just like rocks across the room, and
his immediate reaction.
Delete that footage. That's good stuff, man. I love it.
Such a good scene.
I love too. We didn't really talk much about like when he became king. We get it. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think is so neat about Wakanda in general is like they're so technologically advanced to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
But they are also so rooted in tradition.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way you really get to see that because they really show like some scenes throughout the streets of Wakanda. And it just seems like very traditional, but like it's mixed in with all this technology. Like you got some guys like walking down the street with their crazy like watch cell phone things that they're like breezing through pictures on. But they're like walking through marketplaces where they're like openly cooking food and stuff. It's a really neat mix of like this traditional... the tradition and the technology. I think that's really cool. And like their whole empire is kind of built on tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And then we really get to see that with the whole, the crowning of T'Challa as king, because the four different tribes all have a chance to
challenge
for the throne. And that's a pretty great scene. Cause that's where we get really introduced to the fourth tribe, which is like the fifth tribe, which is the outlier.
The Jabari.
Which is awesome. Yep. And so we get that great fight scene there with T'Challa, victorious. But I love too, how they explain, like they strip away the power of the Black Panther so that it's just him in the fight.
Yep.
So that he can really prove that he's worthy. I think it's good stuff, man.
Yeah. So that's a really cool scene too. Because we, you know, like, we get confronted so much later with Killmonger and lots of people, even, you know, Nakia and everybody who's kind of like, you know, we should be out there doing more.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so in this scene, we get to see them confronted with, you guys are doing too much. You know what I mean? You guys are too far from tradition.
Right.
And M'Baku comes out and straight calls them out, you know, like you let... you know, our advancements are being overseen by a child who has no respect for tradition.
Right.
You know, we have a king, you know, a boy for a king who couldn't even keep his father safe. Yeah. You know, this is, you guys are too off the cuff here. We will not have it.
Right. Yeah.
So it's interesting to see that, and he overcomes that, but then he has to, you know, he's constantly called out later for too much tradition, you know, right, and has to make that decision himself.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So that's cool stuff. I love how colorful the scene is too.
Yeah.
Like all the tribes are wearing like these bright colors. Yep. And it's just like, cause it's beautiful too. Cause it's like on this waterfall thing and like they just kind of do the pan with all the colors and it's just a really pretty scene. I like it quite a bit. But yeah, that's good stuff too. Cause that obviously leads up to when Killmonger gets there later, that's like his whole deal is, yeah, he's like, I've got to write a challenge because I'm blood, of royal descent, royal, right, blood. Yeah, he's got royal blood in him, so that's good stuff too. And then we get to see the fight again but with Killmonger winning and, yeah, throwing T'Challa over the waterfall, which is crazy stuff,
killing Forrest Whitaker.
That's right, yeah, after killing Forrest Whitaker. Yes.
And killing Claw.
Well, yeah, he killed Claw.
Because he drug Claw's dead body to the borders of Wakanda.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's going to bring me to one kind of criticism of this movie that I have a problem with.
Okay.
When they killed Claw.
When they killed Claw. More Andy Serkis. That sucks. So T'Challa has the friend, right, that who's basically the... Well, he seems like the heir, or he runs. They don't really explain, but he basically leads the border tribe.
Right, right.
Wakabi is his name. I don't know if that's how they pronounce it. Wakabi, he's also the boyfriend of the leader of the guard, Okoye's boyfriend.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they do a couple scenes to kind of build him as T'Challa's friend.
Yeah.
You know? And his parents were killed by Claw, so he's really eager to see Claw get killed.
Right.
And so then when T'Challa fails to kill him, he, you know, kind of turns on him a little bit.
Right.
And then as soon as Killmonger, Michael B. Jordan, shows up with the, you know, with dead Claw, yeah, he just like flips completely. I feel like that flip is a little too easy and too total.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I almost feel like they characterized him. Like I got the feeling the couple scenes they showed them together, I got the feeling like they were super close.
Yeah.
So like for this guy to flip on him and be ready to kill him over Killmonger, you know what, yeah, I mean? Like okay, I'm totally with Killmonger now because he killed this guy. That just it feels disingenuous to me. And
it's one I can buy for a lot. Like you have to fill in your own blanks a little bit.
Yeah.
They don't give you like the scene that makes you go, oh, this makes sense to me.
Right.
You know? But there is a lot more going on than just, you know, you promised to kill one guy and failed, you know, because when Killmonger shows up, first of all, he has extracted the revenge that this guy's been looking for the entire time. So automatically right there is that step. You pretty quickly find out that he is Wakandan. I don't know when that guy found out.
Right.
I don't know if he found out right away or if he didn't find out until the scene where everybody else does when they're in the room.
He had to find out before because remember he had the ring. Yeah.
He had taken the ring from him.
So did he see the lip thing yet?
I mean, I would assume.
Okay, see.
I would assume when he got the ring, he also showed him the lip.
Okay. Which plays into kind of what, you know, like... Yeah. Because Killmonger's presence isn't just the Claw part, it's the fact that he is of royal blood. No one knew he even existed.
Yeah.
No one knew what happened to his father, like the real story, apparently.
Right.
Like, everybody in that tribal council there is learning that they've been lied to for this entire time.
For sure.
And, I don't know how close this guy's family was with T'Chaka's brother, or their family, or how any of that goes, but there's a lot of built-in loyalties that we don't necessarily know one way or the other. Plus, you add that to the fact that he has been looking for revenge on this guy most of his life, and Killmonger brought it, and the fact that even if they didn't have any other loyalties together, Killmonger is the product of everyone being lied to by T'Challa's family.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, they don't give you that moment where you go, okay, I understand completely why he turned on him. They also don't give you the moment where he tries to kill T'Challa or anything like that. You know, he has switched loyalties. But he has.
They give you that moment because at the end, he, you know, they.
Well, they're in that battle, but like.
Oh man! Because right before that battle, when T'Challa shows up and he's been repowered, jumping to the end, he shows up and he's been repowered, and he calls out. Killmonger, and he's like, you know, I did not yield, and as you can see, I am not dead. The challenge has to continue. And he's like, nah, we all done with that challenge stuff. And Okoye, who chose to follow the crown over, you know, chose to follow tradition, follow the throne, she immediately is like, you gotta follow tradition if you're not gonna. And so we get to see that moment because he looks at Okoye, you know, they look at Okoye, and Okoye is like, okay, you got to finish this challenge or else. And they turn to him, and he's the other side of that, and he's like, don't worry, bro, we got this. And he leads his guys out to kill, you know, like he leads the charge. Because even one of his dudes says, what shall we do?
Yeah.
And he's like, let's go kill T'Challa. Yeah. And he runs out to kill T'Challa. So, I mean, I feel like that's pretty definitive of, like, you know.
Probably. I feel like with most of these movies.
Like, he chooses his side there.
Yeah, he definitely chooses his side. Yeah. I still think that's a little different than the willing. Like, with all of these movies, anytime there's a giant battle, theoretically, everyone's trying to kill everyone else. Except that until you get that actual moment where, like, he's basically holding a knife to his throat, I feel like the movie always leaves itself open to that.
Bro, he runs out there with that sword and slashes him right away. Yes, and then calls the rhinos. I think you're underselling that. I get what you're saying, but I don't think he can get that moment anymore.
Yeah,
because he runs out there and slashes him with his sword, and that doesn't work because he's got the Black Panther suit on. And then he blows that horn and leads the rhinos in and runs him down with a rhino. Like, that's... I mean... I get what you're saying. I think you're underselling this moment a little.
Wasn't he also kind of earlier on one of the ones that was pushing for them needing to do more kind of a thing?
When they
had that conversation, like at the rhinos in the beginning.
Yeah.
Wasn't he kind of saying something there about?
So at that point he said, because T'Challa's kind of confiding in him, and he's like, you know, Nakia thinks we should be doing more. And he's like, well, more like what? You know, and he's like, thinks we should be providing foreign aid and sharing our technology. And he says, look, if you want me to go out and lead the charge and cleanse this world, I'm down for that. If you want to let people in, I don't think we can let them in.
Oh, that's right. That's
right. So he's, you know.
Now they have, I mean, theoretically, getting back into the same discussion. I mean, he's also leading that charge against his wife's tribe.
Right.
Yeah.
But then they get to the moment where she literally does have a knife to his neck, and then he's surprised, like, oh, you're actually going to kill me over this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing I'm talking about. Overall, if you're looking at this as a grand battle, everybody's trying to kill everybody. But without getting that very moment in a movie, it feels like this to me in almost all, like, any type of fantasy movie for sure.
Okay.
You know, when you have these giant battles, there's often times where it's like friend pitted against friend.
Yep.
And so on a logistics level, you go, well, this is kind of weird because they're trying to as hard as they can to murder each other. But unless that movie gives you the moment where that's actually happening, I always feel like you just somehow, you're supposed to look at it as just a big fight.
Yeah.
You know? And again, they have that moment right there, and he's all surprised about it.
Right.
Like, why is he shocked that she's willing to kill him when they're in a death battle together?
Yeah.
But he is.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say, I think you're right on that, but I think he definitely has that moment the other way with T'Challa. You know, like, he's not out there just fighting chicks. Like he's out there fighting T'Challa head on. He's leading that charge. He's not out there just fighting the chicks and then the Jabari. Like, he goes straight at T'Challa, I feel like. I don't know. All I watch is at home. You go and watch it. Let us know who you agree with.
Who's right?
I feel like John's challenging you. You guys probably fight on a waterfall.
Probably fight on a waterfall.
Yeah, that's the only way to settle this.
Find me one within driving distance.
Also, I think we're making this has grown into a bigger chunk of the podcast. It's like the. This is just kind of one of those things where I was kind of like, I've always felt like, I don't feel like that's quite earned. You know, that turn there just feels a little dramatic to me. Not something that ruins the movie or, you know, breaks the flow or anything like that.
Yeah. I always wonder what's going to happen to that guy in Black Panther 2.
Yeah.
Because I can see him not being there at all or not even discussed, or I can see him being best friends again. I have no idea where that's going to go.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
I mean, he's got to go.
He wasn't there in Infinity War. Unless he was. Who
knows? He got Thanos'd, maybe.
Yeah.
Hopefully he got executed, man. That's what I...
Oh, whoa, wow.
Guys, hey, you know what? If either one of you guys ever joins...
They made Okoye do it.
Joins Geekmonger.
Oh, no. Geekmonger.
And turns on me.
Nerdmonger.
Nerdmonger. Nerdmonger. Nerdmonger ever comes in and you guys turn on me, I'm going to have you executed. I'll tell you what.
Oh, my God. Oh, man.
I don't know where we want to go from here. We've covered a lot.
We've covered like a lot of the big stuff. You know, there was the moment where they convinced the Chobani. Is that the name of the fifth tribe to join the fight?
Oh, the Jabari.
The Jabari, yeah.
For the M'Baku.
Well, they tried to convince them and they got laughed at.
Yeah.
They just showed up anyway.
Man, yeah. that's a great scene in general. When they walk in, I love when he won't let any of them talk. And then they bark at Martin Freeman.
Yeah.
And tell him he's going to eat him.
Yeah.
Or feed him to the...
Yeah, I will feed you to my children. I'm kidding. We are vegetarians.
Yeah.
This is so funny. He's just like cracking up. Yeah. That's a great scene. Well, that's a cool scene altogether right there. Because that all takes place after... So we have the challenge with Killmonger and T'Challa.
Yeah.
And Killmonger essentially wins, right. You know, kills Forest Whitaker and then throws T'Challa off the waterfall. And then the movie just kind of diverges and it's just about, you know, Nakia and the Queen and Shuri and Agent Ross for a little while.
Well, you get that cool vision scene with Killmonger.
Mm-hmm.
Going to meet his father,
yeah,
like you saw with T'Challa earlier, which I thought was great.
It's a real good scene, and I also like that you can kind of see there, you know, that like his father kind of tells him we're lost, you know,
right.
And that guy's a great actor too. I really love
he's
him.
Fantastic. I don't know his name, but he's
Sterling Brown.
Yes. Yep.
And because, you know, they have the vision and he sits there and he talks about how beautiful, tells him how beautiful Wakanda is. And then asks him, you know, no tears for me. And he's like, well, everybody dies. You know, everybody dies sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, and he has that moment because he says, look what I've done. Now they'll never find us. You know what I mean? And that, like, that's such a, you know, because we know that's basically the answer. You know, that's not like a... drug vision, you know, it's not like something that comes from their own mind, right? You know, in the story, like you meet your ancestor there.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of cool. Kind of builds the mythos there because, you know, he's part of the royal family, but he doesn't get to be with, he's not with the Panthers.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
Right. Yep. He's stuck in this place where he kind of, you know, you almost kind of think about it like he's stuck in this place where he made his choice and built his world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, this is his afterlife where he screwed everything up, basically, you know? And so to get that moment, because then because he cries, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, after he says, you know, God, look what I've done, you know, and he sees kind of the monster that he created.
Right.
You know, and sees that, you know, we're lost. And even Killmonger says, well, maybe they're the ones that's lost. And he's just, you know, he doesn't say anything, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he's like... you can tell, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a powerful moment.
Totally.
That's a good moment. And then Killmonger wakes up and burns the place down.
When he burns it all down. Yep.
We also I love getting the Martin Freeman version of experiencing Wakanda.
Yeah.
Like when we get to see Wakanda as an outsider for a minute there, when he first wakes up, you know, he's just like, where, how long ago was Korea?
Right. What is this place?
Like a day. Well, first he pops up and scares her.
Yeah.
She calls him colonizer.
Yeah. Don't scare me, colonizer.
Colonizer. Yeah. I know.
I like that he's like, my name is Aiden Ross. And she's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Is this Wakanda? It's Kansas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we get to experience all that, you know, because he's like, how long ago was Korea? And she's like, a day. And he's like, bullet wounds don't just heal in a day. And she's like, they do here.
Right.
You know, and then he's just like looking around at those like electromagnetic trains and all that stuff going on. And you get to kind of, because we already went through experiencing Wakanda as an audience in the first place.
Yep.
But then we get to actually follow a character through. It's like, because when we experienced it the first time, it's with a bunch of people who were used to it.
Right.
You know, yeah. So no one was surprised by anything, but we were.
Yeah.
And then halfway through the movie, they show us again, except with someone who is going, what in the world is going on?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and this is also, too, where she kind of gives the breakdown of those trains and everything, too, which sets up for a key moment in that end fight.
Yeah.
Because she talks about how she kind of helped design those train systems and they're carrying vibranium, but they found out that vibranium is too dangerous to carry at those high speeds. So she created those kind of magnetic whatever they are that basically depowers the vibranium so they can move it that fast.
Yeah.
Like temporarily depowers it. So that obviously comes into play later on during that end fight that we already talked about, because that's where T'Challa baits Killmonger into fighting him. Because he knows that he has moments where the suits get depowered.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. Which I don't know the science behind the vibranium. Like, I thought it was just a really tough metal.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they've created this entire technological advancement out of it. And apparently, if you move it really fast, it's dangerous. So.
Yeah, well, they kind of talked about how it came from a meteor that crashed onto the African continent, like, millions of years ago. And so it's got some sort of supernatural, like, I think it, like, they keep talking about it's all very scientific, but I think this material obviously kind of plays into the greater cosmic stuff of the MCU, right? Like, it's got to somehow.
Well, and it's, and they've hinted that, well, and that's kind of the idea of it, too, because we've only seen it as Captain America's shield, right?
Yeah.
But then we did get the little hint in Ultron, where Ultron says, you know, the most versatile substance on the planet, and they made a frisbee out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then he builds Vision out of it, and so, like, obviously it can do other stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, it, you know, like, Claw's gun is made out of it somehow.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You know, like, so, you know, well, and then Claw said, you know, so then Claw, because that's what Claw says, so we get that kind of reveal, you know, where he's like, you know, because even Martin Freeman, Agent Ross, at one point is like, it's hard metal, right? Hardest metal on Earth. And he just laughs at him and he's like, it's the hardest metal on Earth. And they use it to make weapons and it powers their society and they sew it into their clothes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, it's part of the realization that, like, well, you know, yeah, it's been portrayed as a really strong metal, but it's also, we don't know what else, you know, they can do everything else with it.
Yeah. All right, where are we? I think we've pretty much covered like a ton of stuff. Was there any other key moments that we really need to bring up here?
Where's vibranium? Ugh, vibranium gonna stand if adamantium comes in?
Well, vibranium is stronger than adamantium, right?
Yeah,
adamantium's
not as
strong as, like, it goes vibranium, adamantium, I think, is the levels of it.
Well,
because I know that it's one of those things where, like, Wolverine's claws can cut through everything except Captain America's shield, kind of a thing.
It's always
been a thing.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not as strong as vibranium, but it's one of the strongest metals.
Yeah. Well, and it's the kind of thing, adamantium comes from Earth, right?
Yeah.
And still vibranium comes from the space rock.
space rock.
Are there other, I mean, man, it feels...
Yeah. I mean, there's nuances to the movie we're missing.
Yeah.
We haven't gushed over every line of dialogue like we have in some movies. But I think we've gotten the heart of most of what is going on with Black Panther.
So I feel like one of the things I wanted to say, I feel like this is one of the more complete experiences in the Marvel, the MCU, the Marvel Universe, in that this movie does everything great. You know, it tells a complete story. It draws everything together. A lot of the other movies, you can kind of pick out a strength, and it leans. Not that they're not great. You know, not that Thor Ragnarok is not great, but what makes Thor Ragnarok stand out is how funny it is every step. You know what I mean? There's a joke a minute in that movie, right? So this movie has pulls everything together. You know, I would look back at some of the Captain Americas and like, man, they've got such a great story through them, you know. I feel like this one has one of the more complete experiences where it's tough to pick out. Like, it's not the funniest, you know, it's not, you know, the action is great, but, you know, maybe it's, you know, I don't know if it has the best action, you know, it's pretty par on action. But, man, by the time you get to the end of that movie, Captain America, or Black Panther, by the time you get to the end of Black Panther, I'm just like, that was so great. You know what I mean? Yes,
absolutely, yeah. Man. Absolutely.
Yeah, like...
Well, and you know, they do a very good job of making all of these movies stand alone. Like, you can go see... You know, I know people who just went and saw the third Thor movie.
Yeah.
And still really enjoyed it, you know. And they you know, they've seen six of the Marvel movies out of 20. And they've like, well, you know... but there is... always a feeling of interconnectivity.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie has that too. Like, we've seen Black Panther before and it leads into this.
Yep.
We saw the death of his father in another movie, but they still give us that moment here.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie, they very much lead off into, you know, our world is expanding because Wakanda is opening up. They give us that. But it doesn't have that direct correlation into, like, it doesn't lead into the next movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, because Wakanda's opening up, that's why Thanos comes in or anything
right,
like that.
Right.
It's like hinting at an expansion, but not a direct destination. So as a standalone movie, I think it's one of the strongest where this would fit perfectly. They wouldn't have to change anything. The rest of the MCU could disappear, and this movie would still be at the exact same level.
Yeah. Well, and they do so much world building too, you know what I mean? It really feels like it's starting to create a new franchise.
Yeah.
You know, like, this movie can move forward and have its own spin-offs, you know, because they've, like, they established the whole world of Wakanda, which is so different from, like, our world.
Yeah.
I want to go see what else is in Wakanda.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
They create some great characters, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, we could have a Game of Wakanda, right? We have a Game of Thrones, in Wakanda, like this, you know, African futurist, still like, you know, oh, well, we've got this guy plotting and wants to challenge, and we've got M'Baku, who's, you know what I mean? Who's plotting to take M'Baku's throne, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much to do there.
Well, it's cool. It's like, it's the way that we've seen the cosmic stuff built out to expand the MCU with Guardians, and then Thor, and then Doctor Strange came along and started expanding the MCU by showing us the different realms and all this stuff. And now we've got Wakanda opening things up in a different direction as well, like a little more grounded based on Earth, but it's still a whole new world that hasn't really been experienced yet until this movie.
Right.
So it's cool.
Can we get the Marvel version of Coming to America, but with M'Baku?
Man, I'm down. I'm so down for that.
Oh my God.
So I also, you know, this also ever in regards to what you're saying, this also kind of addresses, like, it almost feels like this movie in some ways was made to address a lot of the Marvel criticisms, you know, because they talk about, you know, well, every movie has a one-dimensional villain. And then,
which I don't really agree with.
I think we've discussed that a lot.
Like, there's a lot of good villains. Yeah. But
they still make, you know, a lot of people make that complaint.
Right.
You know, one-dimensional villains. And then the climax is always a big fight with a bunch of gray, punchable bad guys. You know, a bunch of gray fodder, basically.
Right,
you know, a bunch of gray, punchable bad guys that just get destroyed so we can have a big fireworks show. Man, they gave us a three-dimensional villain in Killmonger. And the big fight at the end was, you know, three or four factions that were all... had faces and motivations you know, like
they all had a main character leading
and a big brawl that we understood why they were fighting and what they were fighting for.
Right.
Man, this is great. This is a great movie.
It's a fantastic movie. It is a fantastic movie. And again, brings us to how hard it's going to be to rank the Phase 3 movies because this is another one that, like Thor Ragnarok, like, it's so good, but in its own way. Yeah, like, for everything you just said, like this is easily... I could say that Black Panther is one of my favorite experiences of watching MCU movies, but for its own reasons that stand completely apart from why I love the other movies the way I do.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, and
the two leads, you know, Chadwick Boseman and
Michael B. Jordan,
again, two absolutely fantastic actors playing these roles. And it's so neat because, you know, it's not the first time we've seen characters that are basically the opposite side of the same coin.
Right.
But I don't know if I've seen a stronger relationship between that. Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, like, it's like Captain America and the Red Skull are supposed to be the same way.
Yeah.
Basically, it's like the all American versus the all Nazi.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, but they're the same. They're powered the same. And so you get kind of get that dichotomy there. And I mean, obviously, we've talked about how great Chris Evans is over and over on this podcast here. Yeah. Hugo Weaving was great. But I still didn't get the relation there nearly as strong as I got between these two. You know? Like, these really were, like, top-notch. Like, I mean, this is the same guy with a slightly different circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And just, it's very, very much fun to watch that end fight scene.
Yeah.
I don't even know. Like, fun feels like the weird word for it because it is so heavy.
Yeah.
You know, but it is so gratifying
to
watch that end fight scene between those two because of that. And
well, it's almost you know, it's almost tough. I would almost like you almost want to hear them have a debate. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like more so, you know, like punching and kicking each other. Like they're almost too opposed to just solve it with punches and a knife stab. You know,
yeah.
Like we need something more definitive than that.
Yeah.
And you know, we kind of didn't, you know, talk about T'Challa much. He is so good in this movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he creates this persona. So, like, we kind of talked about in Civil War how he almost has his superhero arc in the background of that movie.
Right.
Where it's, you know, we see he's got these powers. He's using these powers to kind of get revenge instead of to be a superhero.
Right.
You know, like, that's all consuming him at that moment. And then at the end of that movie, in the span of just deciding, I'm not going to let myself be consumed with revenge, he decides that.
Right.
So when by the time we get to this movie, like, what's this movie going to, you know, what's this movie going to be about?
Yeah.
And so we kind of get to see a rare relation here. So like Thor, who should be king of Asgard.
Right.
We see him not being king all the time.
Uh-huh.
Captain America, we see Captain America, who is always the leader, just being the leader. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He, like, that's his thing. You know, we kind of get to see him just stand fast and see how everybody affects him. I almost feel like it's remarkable that we get to see T'Challa play almost like the inverse of Captain America, where he's a leader, he's accepted his role as leader, but he's getting pulled in all these different directions and kind of seeing how he plays against that.
Yeah.
You know, because we've got, you know, the girl he's in love with, Nakia, who wants him to go out and do more. We see the council who wants things to kind of stay the same. You know, they even say at one point, you know, we need a king, not a warrior. You should be here. you know?
Yeah.
He still takes that opportunity. He decides, well, I need to go after Claw. He goes after Claw. He doesn't send some spies.
you know what I mean? Right.
Which maybe that could be the point of the movie, you know, a point of the plot. Like, well, we need to send him out to do some stuff, you know. But I think it also speaks to his character a little bit. He's like, nah, I'm going to go. I'm the Black Panther. I'm going to go do that.
Yeah.
You know, and then having to decide, you know, we see him kind of get thrown off kilter when he finds out that his father lied to him.
Right.
You know, and that's why he accepts. I mean, probably he shouldn't have bothered accepting Killmonger's challenge, right?
Right.
But, you know.
Yeah, and that whole, like, the way that whole scene plays out, because even when he comes in, he basically whispers to him, you know, he's like, the only reason I don't kill you is because I know who you are. Like,
right.
There's this very internal battle going on within T'Challa that plays out. And to your point, how good Chadwick Boseman is, like, you can feel that going as it is because he doesn't know what to do right there. But he knows he has to be king.
Yeah.
He's just not sure what that means in that moment. Yeah. You know?
Well, also very telling in that scene, he does not respond to anybody who talks to him except for Killmonger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, everybody's saying something. Who is this? What are we doing? Where is he? Who is, you know, everybody's talking to him and he does not respond or acknowledge any of them.
Yep. Yep.
You know, and even the ones that, you know, after somebody finally asks him, well, who are you? And Killmonger makes his big proclamation.
Yeah.
You know, like his mom is like, whatever. You know, like we're not gonna honor this guy's. You know, he's an outsider. We're not gonna honor this guy's thing. And he doesn't even say no. We have to. You know what I mean? Yeah, he's just like, nope. I accept your challenge.
Yep.
You know, so he's obviously not operating fully there.
Well, because he's got the weight of both of that.
Right.
Like, I mean, he's got, this is a bad guy.
Yep.
He's sure of that. Yeah. But also, he's been lied to this entire time.
Right.
And like we were talking about with his friend going through all the betrayal and all that stuff. Like, he's going through all that too, but he can't do anything about it because he is king.
Yes.
You know? So he's just got to internalize all of that and then react accordingly.
Yep.
So, and you can just watch.
Yeah.
Watch a brilliant actor do that.
Yeah, man. Yeah, totally. Yep.
Chadwick Boseman is phenomenal.
Fantastic.
You know, and he steps right in and he feels, man, on that level too. You know what I mean? He just comes right out and, like, I mean, we saw him kind of stand with Captain America and Iron Man and everything in Civil War, you know? So, like, we know Black Panther is on that level, but Chadwick Boseman really steps in and, like, you feel it. You know what I mean? Like, this is a new player. You know? It was phenomenal.
Awesome. So the end is them basically making the decision that they are going to open up, right? And they're going to share their technology with the world, kind of a thing. And we...
Well, that's... So that's... I forgot. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah.
Because I was leading to that, because that's where we get the final decision.
Right.
Right? When, after T'Challa gets killed and gets fed the one heart-shaped herb that Nakia salvaged,
right?
And he goes back to the astral plane and confronts his father.
So
that's where he has to realize, because kind of the reason that his father gives him is, you know, like, well, I had to kill my brother, and we just left the kid there because we kind of need to keep this secret so we could stay a secret, right?
Yeah.
And like, so that's where he kind of realizes, like, you know, how keeping the secret made my father do a bad thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's where he kind of makes that decision, like, nah, man, we, the old ways aren't going to work, you know?
Yeah.
It brings more trouble.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's important. You know, that's where he gets that. He makes that decision.
Right.
And I have to go back and stop.
All of the great leaders in Wakandan history are there, and he tells them all they're wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's where he decides we're going to do it different. We're going to fix it.
Yep. And that's kind of where the final scene of the movie closes, is them basically showing up back in the U.S.
Yeah.
Which was just the best.
Yeah. Which is super
like
cool.
How mad Suri was.
Yeah. You're going to take me to Coachella.
Yeah.
Or Disney World.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
So was it the...
That little kid, when he shows him the spaceship, that little kid goes, "That's like a Ducati spaceship." We could break it down and sell it. I'm like, man.
Oh, man.
Okay. I met that kid.
Yeah.
So is Suri your favorite Disney princess?
Yep. She is now. She is a Disney princess. Yeah. I mean, that's tough because Leia is a Disney princess too.
Oh,
and so that's tough. So mid-credit scene is them like making the announcement to like the
World, the UN. World.
The UN. UN, yeah, the UN, yeah. The United Nations.
Yep.
That's the word I was looking for, that they were basically going to open up the borders and open up their technology to the world. I love this scene in the fact that it totally just properly portrays exactly what you would expect an arrogant, dumb politician to do. You know, like when they're like he does his big speech and then the one guy just goes, with all due respect, what's a nation of fishermen gonna do for the rest of us? And then like everybody starts laughing, and it's just like this.
For the record, they're not necessarily dumb politicians. That's what Wakanda has wanted everyone to
believe
forever.
Well, I know, I get that, but like the arrogance of the laughing and everything in the room, you know, just it reminds me of like the recent stuff that's happened when like Mark Zuckerberg's up there trying to explain how the internet works to the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's what it reminded me of.
Good call. I stand down.
Yeah. Well, I really like that. I think that's a cool, because the movie ends on that little kid running up to him and being like, "Is this yours?" You know, and he's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Who are you?" And he just kind of starts to get that smile. Yeah. And then it cuts to the credits.
Yeah.
Then when they come back for the end scene, it's the same thing, right? So that politician is like, well, what can you guys do for us? And he gives them that same smile.
And Agent Ross is all like, yeah. Like he's back there like nodding with a big stupid smile on his face. Right. I love it.
Yeah.
And then the post-credit scene on this one was the reveal of Bucky hiding out in Wakanda, which was awesome. The White Wolf, which is good stuff because we're getting closer and closer to Infinity War.
And I guess we kind of have to assume that they thawed him out afterwards. Because man, would I have gone and gotten Bucky real fast to help me kill Killmonger. You know what I mean? Like hold on.
Good
like,
call.
Like, okay, M'Baku, I don't need your help. I got a Bucky.
I got White Wolf.
Right, here's your arm.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Here's your arm, let's go. Because it seemed like he was pretty freshly awakened at this point, right?
Yep.
Like so.
Well, and he kinda thanks her, you know what I mean? Yeah. It doesn't feel like he's been there a while.
Right.
So
yeah, so good stuff.
Yep.
Because that's going to lead us into Avengers Infinity War.
Oh, man.
Which, holy cow.
We're
there.
I'm in.
We're
ready.
You're ready. Yep, yeah. That's next. That is coming up next. We are really getting, we are in the end game, guys, because we have three movies left
to talk about.
And then we are at end game. So Infinity War, Ant-Man and Wasp, Captain Marvel will be the next three. So start doing your homework. Watch those movies.
One of these things
is not like the other. Two of these things belong together.
Oh, that's funny.
Two of these things are kind of the same. Yeah. Man.
Awesome. Well, guys, if you haven't already, please make sure you check us out on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button if you prefer the video version, because we've covered every Marvel movie leading up to this point, and we've got a couple left before we get into Endgame. So make sure you guys are watching us there on YouTube, or if you prefer the audio podcast, you can download us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, or your favorite podcasting app. So rate us, review us, do all that good stuff, and stay up to date, because we're getting down to the end here, guys. We're wrapping things up. So until next time, Wakanda forever.
The Geek Easy Podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. PixelDan.com's The Geek Easy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of the Geek Easy Podcast.